First of all, welcome and thank you for visiting our parliament. This is the last sitting before the recess for Easter, and I also believe that it could also be the last sitting that we will ever have in this building, because now we're going to move in the other one that was recently built just on the other side of Aletta. I welcome you here, and please, I'll give you the floor immediately so that you can address the Foreign Affairs Committee, and then we'll have the discussion and also invite my colleagues here to intervene with questions and statements. Thank you. The floor is yours.
Yes, I'll have some coffee. Well, thank you so much, Mr. President. It's a great pleasure to be here on a special day, the last day maybe in this parliament. And I saw the new building. We walked by the new building. It's a beautiful building by a fantastic architect. But still, this place is special. And the chamber, I really enjoyed
it. This was the Grandmaster's Palace. Yes. And ironically, it was built by a Maltese architect. It's not for Parliament. We engaged a foreign architect. But that's the irony of life.
That's the irony, yes.
Our Portuguese descent.
Yeah,
Portuguese descent.
Yes, exactly. Pinto Vilhena, and we have an argument whether Ximenez was Portuguese. I'll have to do some research tonight on the internet. It's a great pleasure to be here. I already had a number of meetings today and tomorrow as well with the foreign minister and with the deputy prime minister talking about EU affairs. It just so happens that we have important issues where Portugal and Malta are very involved and very important for both countries. And so I think it's a good time to come here. The obvious ones are the southern neighborhood. It's being revised, the European Neighborhood Policy. I'm personally very involved in this. And so this was something I discussed today, and we're very interested in knowing your opinion. Sometimes the debate is a bit abstract, theoretical, about the principles for the new neighborhood policy, and we have to make it more concrete. One of the things that I think is important is for Portugal and Malta is to insist on the importance of the southern neighborhood and the different ways to do this. I'm just coming from Tunis, where I was at the March Against Terrorism, and very clear to me that we have to support Tunisia as much as we can. And if it's not countries like Portugal and Malta, it's not going to be the other countries in the north or in Central Europe, which understandably are more concerned about the situation in Ukraine right now. I also talked about Libya, especially with your foreign minister. And as I'm sure you're aware, the voice of Malta on Libya is the first voice we hear in the Foreign Affairs Council and in every discussion, because you have an expertise here that, honestly, is not really shared, not even by Italy, I think, really knowing what the situation is in Libya and what the way forward should be. And we need to listen to you in order not to make some tragic mistakes. So this is also part of the conversation today, trying to, on issues like military intervention in Libya, what should be the coordinates, under what terms and in what circumstances would this be a good idea, and under what circumstances would it be a bad idea? I think we need to listen to you on this question, because you know much better what to do and what not to do. And we all know that there have been mistakes in the past, plenty of mistakes in the past on issues of this sort. Then migrations. This is also an important issue. Perhaps Portugal is not as deeply involved in this issue as countries like Spain, Italy, Greece, Malta, for reasons that one can understand. We are less subject to migration pressures. Simply as a matter of geography, it's difficult to cross the Atlantic in that part with the tides and the currents. We are told by experts at Frontex that it will always be unlikely that there will be migratory flows directly targeting the Portuguese coast. But we are part of this region, and we want to be part of this debate on migration. And I'm personally working very hard on this, try to get our government to have develop a common position on migration. What are the issues here? Well, we'll probably have to rethink the role of Frontex, but very unclear right now what that will be. And then the other issue is burden sharing and how to do it. We discussed this today with your foreign minister, I will have a meeting with the Commissioner Avramopoulos on this as well. I'm hopeful that we can find ways that are not binding, legally binding, that have a voluntary element, because I think form of burden sharing that is legally binding, there's no political conditions right now to impose it, but we could have voluntary programs of burden sharing, which if they are led by the Commission, they will have much more impact than if a member state comes up with them. I understand that Germany has the idea of launching a voluntary program for refugees where there would be burden sharing. Every country would participate according to their size and possibilities. But it would be even better if the Commission took the initiative of... I think it would be much better to have a program of this sort if the Commission took the initiative of launching it, of putting some peer pressure on member states to join, even coming up with criteria that are objective for that burden sharing. Because if it's a member state or a group of member states coming up with the criteria, it's going to be very difficult to get them accepted. But if it's the Commission to do it. So I think this is the idea for the next year. It's nothing revolutionary. I don't think we're ready, if you ask me, to change the Dublin regime. But we could do a lot even without changing the legislation. And I've seen it at the EU that this sort of peer pressure has a lot of capacity to get results. We're seeing that now with the Juncker plan, sort of peer pressure for countries to join. Sometimes it's actually quite enough. And if there's no other way to do it, it is our best option. So I think these three topics are the main ones. There are, of course, all the others, but on these three topics, our two countries have common interests, we need to develop a common approach to the three of them. Of course, we're not... we are trying to support the process in Libya as much as we can, so we're available to help, even if we're not directly involved in it for the time being, but we may be in the future, and so we'll also need to report back to Lisbon exactly what the terms might be. But Libya for us is very important. It always was and still is. And we're concerned about ISIS in Libya. This is also part of the reason for my visit to hear your opinions on this. I heard the opinions from the government here, how concerned they are about ISIS and the ISIS threat, but it'd be very good to hear your opinion as well, and the Parliament's opinion on this. So I'll stop here, but I think these are the main topics.
Well, thank you very much. I think we share a lot of your thoughts here. And, I appreciate also the fact that we concentrated on problems relating to the Mediterranean, because I come from attending the Conference for Common Forest and Security Policy and the Common Security and Defense Policy that was held in Latvia. And the main topics for discussion was obviously Ukraine and the problems in Ukraine. However, after the last developments in Libya, we managed to put Libya on top of the agenda of the discussions. And there was a clear commitment also by the European Union to be more focused and to put more resources on the Libya situation. We don't think that a military intervention would be right at this time for Libya. We all know that there is a political instability, and political stability should be achieved, in my opinion, and I think it's the general opinion, with discussions on the table, through diplomatic relationships. military intervention should be always the last resort and should always, in our opinion, be led by a United Nations committee or something like that. So, military intervention, I believe it won't do the job right now. And we also believe, it's the general feeling as well, that we had this hype of ISIS in Libya and the alarm that was risen even across Europe. And many other political leaders agreed with our position that the United Nations should intervene. In fact, we also asked the intervention of Bernardino León also in this conference, but obviously he was busy with the discussions themselves and he could not attend, because that's why we believe that the United Nations should be always involved and no action should be taken unilaterally by any country or on its own or a coalition by countries, but it should be led also by the Security Council. As regards the immigration, fortunately enough, we don't have that influx. It has been like, what, a couple of years now that we managed not to get influxes. We were either lucky or the Italians are extremely generous. So because the Italians are getting all the immigrants that are crossing towards Europe. The immigration is not just an immigration problem for the country that's receiving. It's also a human tragedy, because we've witnessed a lot of human lives that are being lost at sea, and that it's something that we should also take care of and cater that it doesn't happen. So if we can solve Libya and make Libya a viable state, a prosperous state, where one can also get immigration into Libya and stay there because it's prosperous, we would, I think, find a solution to immigration for inside Europe, because immigrants who are crossing the Sahara Desert would stop eventually in Libya, because there are opportunities in Libya themselves and not risk their lives paying thousands of dollars to cross the Mediterranean and fight absolutely nothing to be detained, basically, because that's the policy. We have 18 months of detention. So if we actually try to solve Libya, I think we'll solve a lot of problems. Regarding burden sharing, there was already a voluntary commitment by European countries, but we didn't see any concrete result. Ironically enough, the United States of America took more immigrants from Malta than all the European Union states combined together. So voluntary burden sharing won't do it. On the other hand, if you impose burden sharing, there is a counter-argument that it might encourage more and more immigrants to cross the Mediterranean, because they will eventually find themselves in a European country. For us, Malta, if we have 1,000 immigrants coming all at once in our island, it would be equivalent to 1 million in Germany, because of our size and our population and our density. So for us, immigration, it's a huge problem. Fortunately, it's been mitigated during the last months, but it could change in a day. For example, as I told you, a boat of 700 immigrants just arrives on our shores, it would create chaos in our islands. So yes, we have to tackle the problem of immigration, not just individually, not just Malta and Italy, or even in your case, because I believe there is also a problem on the Iberic Peninsula, on your own, but it's a European problem, and it could become a worse problem if ISIS and terrorist factions could infiltrate with immigrants. There is no way how to screen these people, and there is a concrete possibility that would happen. And that's not just a Maltese problem, a Portuguese problem, an Italian problem, but it's a European problem. And I'm sure that right now many European states are looking towards east, because they're afraid of the big bear lying to the east, but there is also a huge problem, a tiger lying in the south, which could be lethal. But I invite now my colleagues here if they want to make an intervention.
Thank you. First of all, I also would like to welcome you on behalf of the opposition. I represent the opposition in terms of the spokesman for foreign affairs. First of all, I think, even as Luciano said, and I must say that especially on the Libya and the immigration issue, both sides of this house share quite common on the discussion going underway. Clearly, this is the number one concern for Malta at the moment. As you rightly said, we appreciate the Nordic European countries are more concerned on the Ukraine issue, which is clearly an issue which we also lend our solidarity to the way Europe is approaching the issue. However, I think of equal and possibly of more immediate threat also for the security of Europe is the issue in Libya, which unfortunately for many member states, they fail to appreciate the size of the problem. I mean, if you take Libya itself as a territory, although it's a country of 6 million people, the territory is bigger than Germany and France together. So one can appreciate the size of the problem. And the situation in Libya is such that the lack of a single government that is securing security in Libya, these ISIS or groups that sympathize with ISIS, because we know that ISIS is not really an organized phenomena of a structure that is so interlinked that has a single chain of command. I mean, possibly a bit more in Iraq and Syria it is such, but the ISIS phenomena and also now the Boko Haram phenomena are these sort of organizations that simply put up the same flag because they share the same ideals, and that makes them more dangerous because it means they can sprout anywhere, even in the heart of Europe, because as their popularity, idealism, show of strength grows, then you will find more sympathizers who share their ideals to stand up and say, we too are ISIS, and perform acts of terror, like we've seen in Tunisia, what we've seen in France, and we've seen also in Denmark and in other European countries, simply idealists which put up the same flag and do the same terrorist activity. And therefore the eradication of ISIS is an effort which cannot be limited to Syria and Iraq, but the attention of the international community has to be also given due attention also to Libya and also Boko Haram itself. Why Libya even more specifically? Because Libya is such a huge territory that in reality vast parts of Libya, especially the desert, the central part of Libya, is being used by these fundamentalist groups as terrorist training grounds. So today, if you want to become a terrorist, you go to Libya to get trained. It is where it is effectively happening, not Syria and Iraq. And that makes them in a place which is even more close in proximity to Europe than Syria and Iraq, which is clearly more distant. And therefore, we need to send this important message in the heart of Europe that this is a time bomb, very close to Europe. It is on the border, not some countries away, but it is effectively on the border. And therefore, it is important that Europe is starting to give, I think a bit late, but is starting to give the attention to this situation. How to address it? Clearly, the first thing we need to see is a government in Libya that can secure its borders and give back stability to the country. We support, obviously, the United Nations-led discussions. But we feel also that the international community needs to put a bit more pressure on the resolution of these discussions, and that the various representatives in Libya do send the meaningful representatives. We fail to appreciate enough that the supposedly elected people in Libya do not really hold the power, but it is the heads of the tribes that really hold the power in Libya. And therefore it is with them that we need to discuss. And before pushing Western ideologies of democracy, first we push security and the fact that these people need to find a form to live together, to have a common government, at this point appointed by those that hold the power in Libya, to have a common front, to confront ISIS, and to give back Libya an element of stability that then eventually can revolve in some sort of democracy. The fact that we constantly in Europe try and push this country to any sort of democracy which we tailor as deeming fit for them, in a culture which has not learned to use democracy in the right way. It doesn't lead anywhere, because at this stage you have a democratic government which is elected, but then which thinks that it should remain there forever, because they have not yet appreciated the true realities of democracy. And let's be frank, in Europe we've learned democracy in 300 years, not in 1 year. So we can't expect Libya and other similar countries to simply turn to democracy in the way we understand it in its more sophisticated evolution of the European culture overnight. And therefore, when we deal with these people, we need to appreciate these realities, that they may not be really understanding our language. Actually, this an expert in Muslim and Arab world culture expressed the sentiment that in many Muslim cultures, democracy is seen as a threat to the religion. Not in terms of fundamentalist values, but in terms of simple secular values. They see what has happened to Christianity in the Western world, and they realize that a secularized Arab world or Middle East will mean less power to the religious beliefs of that country. And therefore there is this evolution that is happening that we cannot simply ignore and imagine that it is not there, and we think we're dealing with normal Western culture. We're not. We're dealing with a different culture. I agree with Luciano that the military intervention is not the immediate solution. Any sort of deployment of troops to give security to Libya can only be done if we have a common government in Libya that makes that request to the United Nations. That, I think, is very important. And that, ideally, that force is more Arab world-led than European or American-led at this stage. Because, unfortunately, a European force would simply give more strength to the ISIS powers in Libya to garnish more support in their cause against occupiers of a different religion, because they will play on the religion. But if they are coming more from their culture and their religious values, then they cannot use that in terms of the illegitimacy of the force there is. So clearly I believe that that should be where we are pushing. I think as an international community we need to also put more pressure on the Tobruk government not to use the international support to abuse of the its force against the Tripoli government. We cannot have two sides trying to reach an agreement when one side is being aggressive to the other side while discussions are underway. There needs to be a ceasefire. Now, obviously, the Tobruk government, General Haftar, is making the argument that what is he attacking is the Islamic fundamentalists, but some attacks that have happened were not to the Islamic fundamentalists, which would agree and support, but to the Tobruk, the Tripoli occupied territory and government. So that is a line that shouldn't be crossed if we want to try and reach some sort of an agreement, because the Tripoli government in reality is a very inconvenient marriage of convenience between two tribes which do not hold the same values in terms of fundamentalism. You have the Misurata, which is more of a secularized society, but being joint in the occupation of Tripoli with other tribes which are more of Islamic fundamentalism, in reality the Misurata people want more to reaffiliate themselves with the more modern Libya, which the Tobruk government represents, and if we are, yeah, precisely, and if we are attacking them, then clearly we are giving them less legitimacy to convince their people of the split that needs to happen for a united Libya. So I think this is quite an issue. On the issue of immigration, I've taken note of your comments. I cannot say I agree completely. I think a bigger effort needs to be done at a European level in terms of, first of all, the burden sharing issue. I agree with Luciano, the voluntary burden sharing has not really worked. A lot of positive talk when it was launched, a lot of commitments that it could happen. We understand that not all member states want a burden sharing arrangement which is obligatory. But clearly more concrete steps can be taken. We support the Commission proposals in trying to come up with a more common European policy in terms of immigration. I think on the issue of burden sharing, there can be already a mechanism which can be taught, which is obligatory, but which could be used to, for example, the enhanced mechanism, which is when a number of member states agree on a joint initiative, which is obligatory, which at this stage may not all the 27 member states agree to, but if there are, if I'm not mistaken, 11 member states that agree, they can take it forward. And that is already a far more important first step. This is not something that never happened when there was the Kosovo and the ex-Yugoslavia crisis, because Germany was very much concerned of the crisis, the inflows it was going to suffer, Germany, from this conflict. There was a temporary arrangement of a mechanism which was established, which was not voluntary but obligatory on all member states because of the crisis, and so principles had already been established on how such a mechanism works. We're not saying that Malta will not carry its burden, and therefore if other countries are suffering from inflows, I mean, we're talking of quota shares that have to be shared by every member state, and even Malta will take its share. But obviously on an equal footing and bearing, which I think principles have already been established on a European level. So we do urge Portugal to not to accept the resistance of a number of member states which say because we have our problems on immigration, then it shouldn't be obligatory. It could also solve your problems. You know, if the UK is having a lot of immigration problems, which we know it has, then it doesn't mean we are saying UK will continue carrying all its problems and take care of others. Even the UK problems will have to be shared with the European problems, as Malta's problems, Italy's problems, France's problems, and whoever's facing the situation will be shared. I had a meeting with the ambassador of Ireland. Even Ireland has immigration issues. No, because obviously there are direct flows that go there through air, but of people who go there and remain there, and so every country in reality has some sort of problems, and I believe we can work together. I agree with you on the Frontex issue. Clearly the situation relieved itself for Malta, particularly because Italy, through Mare Nostrum, decided not to wait for Europe but to take its own concrete action. We all also always saw and still see a bit too much of a half-hearted approach from Europe in terms of Frontex. Europe have a lot of assets at its disposal if it wanted to have a serious Frontex operation to the level that Mare Nostrum was previously. Today, still Europe has a lot of assets in the Sudanese waters, combating piracy, which today has, in terms of international threat, subsided significantly. Why we keep those assets there and not bring them to the Mediterranean is a big question for us. I think it's wasted resources, rather than using the European resources to more effect where really these resources are needed. The same on the issue of the Dublin regime. I think the Dublin regime was designed in a period when it was completely outdated today in terms of its relevance. We will continue to voice our opinion that, yes, even there, one needs to look at the changes that are necessary to make Dublin more relevant to the realities we are facing today. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't know if Mr. Atrasacheles wants to... Well, please, for your concluding remarks.
Thank you. Thank you so much. This was an excellent exchange of opinions. And I take a good note of your remarks. We are in the process of developing a more coherent and more sophisticated position on some of these issues in Portugal, and I'm personally working on this. So this could not be more helpful for me. Let me go back. Let me rethink some of these issues. On some of them, I don't think there's a disagreement of principle. I am very realistic about what I think can be achieved right now. And this is, as I go deeper into the issue, especially of migration, I find out that that the resistances are very, very significant, that many people, unfortunately, don't even want to talk about the subject, let alone reach ambitious decisions. But we cannot go on like that for much longer. I think one of the positive developments was that the new Commission clearly put migration as one of the 3-4 priorities, together with energy, digital, foreign policy, and migration. This presidency, the Latvian presidency, took it off the table a little bit. You know, I don't mind saying that, because I told them that I thought after the Italian presidency, where it was one of the main topics, that they should have carried on. So this was not particularly constructive. But the issue is not going to disappear, and we have to develop the number of positions on this. I will consider some of these suggestions. I will look at some of these past developments, the Kosovo issue, how it was dealt with, and we can go back to those issues and see if some of those lessons can be learned. But I think it's going to be difficult. This is my impression. I do urge you to keep in mind that even if it's not possible to have an ideal solution right now, then we should invest on something in between, because if the alternative is to have all or nothing, then there's the real risk that we'll have nothing and keep on like this. So perhaps it's not incompatible to work on a voluntary system and see if it's, because the doubt I have and that I take back home is, well, in the past they have not worked, those schemes, but if they are taken up by the Commission itself, which I think the Commissioner is thinking about, then that might be better than if it's by a member state. Especially if it's brought up by a member state that has a direct stake in the issue, it's a problem. If it's brought up by a member state that doesn't have a direct issue, it's better, and if it's brought up by the Commission, even better. But I understand your concerns that this may not be sufficient, and certainly over time and in the long term it's not sufficient. It would be something to get us going, but not the final stage for sure. Everyone knows that migration has to be addressed at the European level eventually. We just don't know how to get there, but on the principle everyone agrees. And that Frontex will eventually have to become something much more robust than it is now. But how to get there, even talking to the Frontex staff a month ago when I was there, I could see that even they, who have a direct stake in raising their profile, are very cautious, because they know that it's not easy. And on Libya, let's wait, hope that Bernardino León and the UN can get a national unity government. I get the sense from my visit here to Malta that perhaps here we should also be open to the possibility that the national unity government was not going to include every single faction. There might be a Brump national unity government, which then in the future might be developed further, but again not be entirely unreasonable on what we can achieve right now. And finally, there's this important ministerial meeting in Barcelona 12-13, where I think, and I convey this to the government here, I think Portugal and Malta and other countries have to, in a way, be the voice of the southern neighborhood. Let me just very quickly say what that means. In the case of Tunisia, I think we should be very supportive of some of their ideas. And I've already been working on some of them. They want to be part of the Horizon 2020 on some favorable conditions. I think we should support that. They want to engage in a discussion with the EU about the long-term relation between Tunisia and the EU, which they think should be very ambitious. What I heard in Tunis last week was we want to share everything but the institution. And this should be supported. It's also a way to make the southern neighborhood as important as the eastern neighborhood, because the imbalance here is that the eastern neighborhood has the ambition to become a member. Could be 30, 40 years. We have to try to balance that. There's no question of membership in the south, but there's the question of trying to raise the ceiling as high as it can go. So this idea, which was there in the past, Solana defended it, of sharing everything but institutions, but membership, they can be associated with more and more programs over time, if they want to. But the ceiling should not be put very low, should be put high. It's not a target, it's just a ceiling. We don't want to get there, but it should be possible to get there, and not to immediately exclude a number of possibilities. This will be a topic for the meeting which is coming up in less than 2 weeks in Barcelona. And I think we'll have very similar positions there. I also convey to your government that Portugal is going to be very supportive of your plans to build and develop this liaison office between the League of Arab States and the European Union. I don't know what the opposition thinks about this, but very supportive as well. I think it's an excellent idea. We need to develop a more robust relation between the EU and its counterpart organizations, because this idea that we meet once a year for a very quick council is not enough. Thank you very much. This was very, very helpful for me. Thank you for your opinion.
Thanks. Thanks for your visit here. I can assure you that foreign policy, I think, is the least item that the opposition and the government fight upon. We always try to go hand in hand and all together with one stand, obviously, because we are all working for the interest of our country. And that, I think, it's very, very important. But thank you again. It was a very interesting meeting. I appreciate that Portugal is in favor of many of our issues here in Malta. And we also hope that, and I'm sure that this will happen, we'll continue to improve our relationships on all levels diplomatically.
Yes. Please, if I can help with the bridging.
Madwar lajt imħara fuq l-agenda rigward l-adwar il-politika komuni għal-affarijiet barranin u sigurtà saret Friga, Latvija, li attendejt għalija jiena u l-Onorevoli Frances Amit Dimek qed nippreżenta l-konklużjoni tagħha għan-nies A1. Kaw xi rimarki? For draft conclusions. Jidher li m'hemmx. Mela naħseb nistgħu nikkunsidrawhom bħala approvati.
Iva.
Approvati. Mela dak l-approvazzjoni wkoll tal-kumitat tal-ftehim il-ħuq fil-grupp ta' ħedma wieħed fil-laqgħa tiegħu ta' 11 ta' frar 2015 dwar il-parteċipazzjoni tal-membri parlamentari Ewropej fix-xogħol ta' grupp ta' ħedma ta' dan il-kumitat għandna qannes A. Naħseb li nista' nikkunsidrawhom ukoll bħala approvat diġà. Ingrazzjak mela għandna korrespondenza wkoll. Mela qannes B. Anna Talba minant Mizlajn Spiteri, agent kap tal-rappresentanza tal-Kommissjoni Ewropea f'Malta, dwar kooperazzjoni u kollaborazzjoni bejn il-Kumitati Parlamentari A tal-Affarijiet Barranin Ewropej u B tal-Affarijiet Ekonomiċi Finanzjari, speċjalment dwar materji ta' sorveljanza fuq il-budgets u l-proċess ta' koordinazzjoni tal-politika ekonomika u finanzjarja. Immedikazzjoniet il-Viċi President Valdis Dombrovskis, inkarigat mill-Euro u Dialogu Soċjali, se jżur Malta l-bidu ta' Mejju 2015. U għalhekk fil-fema tiegħek lill-materja kif titratta European Affairs li hawn taħt il-Kumitat hija wkoll aktar relevanti għall-Kumitat dwar l-affarijiet ekonomiċi u finanzjarji. Naħseb li nista' nagħmlu laqgħa konġunta magħhom, naħseb noqgħu żewġ saħbar biġebla waħda. Għandna wkoll għan-nies C. Għandna Ittram li President tal-Kumitat tal-Affarijiet Barranin tal-Parlament Federali Russu. Kemm dwar il-ħatra tiegħu u dwar id-dialogu. Għandna verżjoni russana. Ma dwar dan ġan kore tal-apparijiet. Parijiet bil-Ministeru l-Affarijiet Barranin. U jidher li m'hemm nebda proibizzjoni jew sanzjonijiet fuq il-laqgħat. U kuntatti fuq il-livell parlamentari. Biżwiet li tagħmel ċert ma' l-Ministeru tagħna li l-ebda membru involut ma jkun taħt sanzjonijiet. Nixtiekom taraw draft etra li beħsibni nibgħat b'risposta u nistaqsi jekk ta' proponu xi emendi għaliha. Mela, naddu għall-item oħra n-nies D fil-korrespondenza Joint Consultation Paper towards the New European Neighborhood Policy. Maħruġa mar-reprezentant u għalet l-Unjoni Ewropea l-Affarijiet Barranin il-Politika ta' Sigurtà. Din il-konsultazzjoni se tibqa' miftuħa sal-aħħar ta' Ġunju 2015 u diġà tarbet il-pożizzjoni tal-Gvern fir-rigward ruqgħet ir-research għall-Istana qegħdin ippreparaw paper fuq wkoll. Naħseb li din ma tkun tidħol fiet working group one biex nittrattaw. Mela, annex I talba għam il-Kommissjoni l-informazzjoni dwar suġġetti li l-Parlament Nazzjonali qiegħed jiddiskuti jew jixti jiddiskuti mal-Kummissjoni u dan sabiex jittieħed kont tagħhom fl-iskedar ta' żjajjar ta' kummissarji fl-Istati Membri. Bħala FEAC resaqna policy ġdida dwar il-Neighborhood Policy u l-Comprehensive European Agenda on Migration. Annex F, proposal to establish a European Business Forum, proposta Danisa, if the court konsultativ sabiex tonqos, u għet neħħar burokrazija zejda għalli s-sir aktar faċli li għet jgħam il-negozju, ma naħseb xil jgħandu jkun hemm xi oġġezzjoni jekk uffiċjalment tressa proposta għallin. Annes G, l-applikazzjoni ta' Malta biex tagħmel parti mill-Convention on the International Hydrographic Organization, IHO, il-Ministeru tal-Affarijiet Barranin qed jinforma lill-FAC b'dan minkejja li din taqa' taħt artiklu 5 tar-radwa l-ratifika ta' trattati kap 304. U fl-aħħar għannes akka r-rapport annwali għall-2014 tal-Kunsill għal-Maltin li jgħixu barra minn Malta għandna sal-aħħar ta' Mejju biex dan il-dokumentat jiddiskuti r-rapport u jagħmel ir-rakkomandazzjonijiet tiegħu. Naħseb nistgħu naġġornaw sine dije.